All right, and wrapping up the calendar this morning is Smith versus Sonatrol Pacific. All right. Thank you.
May it please the Court, my name is Rod Moody. I represent Ms. Smith in this matter. And I guess this argument, pardon me, is similar to the one that you've just had. The bottom line here is that this addresses Civil Rule 8, and I'm asking this Court to reverse Judge Fair in the granting of summary judgment solely on the retaliation claim, which is the claim that was dismissed on summary judgment. My perspective is that the complaint was sufficiently pled. This is a notice pleading state. Quite frankly, in the 2 years that intervened between when I drafted this complaint and when I got to a motion for summary judgment, obviously a lot of additional facts had been developed. The causes of action, however, did not change. And what's important to note here is that all of the decisions, which are the Camfin decision, the Dewey decision, the Kirby decision, which are presented for the proposition that you cannot amend a complaint at the summary judgment level and add a new theory. Every one of those cases adds a new constitutional cause of action, which is factually distinguishable from what we've got. I did not add a new cause of action. What was added in this case were additional facts to support the retaliation claim that was pled in the initial complaint fully. And in this complaint, I went through and frankly put in a lot of facts as opposed to just simple notice pleading and putting in some vague references. I detailed out the information I had at the time, the sexual harassment elements that were going on, the alcoholic consumption issues which were going on, which if you look at the Cudney decision, and again, I know Cudney's no longer valid for, you know, wrongful termination violation of public policy, but I'm not citing it for that purpose. But Cudney found an individual who reported, you know, a supervisor consuming alcohol to be a WSHA violation. The alcohol issue regarding the supervisors, Michelle Evans and Mr. Bullis, are in the complaint. And so did I sit there and state in the retaliation, this is also a part of a WSHA complaint as being the first element, the statutorily protected activity? No, I did not. But can you fairly read?
Does your client need to show she's satisfactorily performing her job to survive summary judgment, or at least to present evidence that she's satisfactorily performing her job?
On a retaliation cause of action?
Yes.
No. She needs to show that there was statutorily protected activity, that she, you know, I'm mistaken. Yes, she does. She needs to show that there was statutorily protected activity, that she suffered an adverse employment action. She suffered the adverse employment action because of her engagement in the activity. Those are the three elements.
Okay. Here, the employer offered a reason for termination that went directly to performance of her job, and then candor when she hadn't performed her job properly. I don't see anything from your client controverting those facts.
Then you haven't read the record, Your Honor, okay, because it's complete in there. And the record points out how she was pulled off of the floor the day that that report was, you know, that is generated, that she was being distracted by another peer-level employee.
Okay, those are all excuses for not doing something you're supposed to do.
No, they are not excuses. And when you look at the burden on summary judgment,
do you agree that she didn't timely report the call from the school district?
I'll agree with that, but that misses the point.
That's a performance issue. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay. Would that alone be a sufficient basis to terminate your client?
Sonatrol would argue that it is.
Okay. Well, tell me why it isn't.
Because it has not been consistently followed. As I pointed out in the evidence, in the record, on summary judgment, there are other individuals who did the exact same conduct and were not terminated.
Did they involve school districts and children?
They involved the failure to report on a fire alarm, and that's the issue. Not the school district.
Well,
the issue with Sonatrol is...
I want to put yourself in the position of an employer. School district's a pretty big client for an alarm company. Children are kind of a special category. Do you think that alarm company could reasonably treat a failure to report a fire report at an elementary school differently than a single-family residence?
Only if you want to rewrite the law. No, it's not different.
So the
policy
employer would be violating the law to evaluate those two omissions differently?
Oh, You know, the policy for Sonatrol is that if you fail to alarm, fault notify on a fire alarm, it doesn't say whether it's a school district or whether it's a hardware store at the, you know, at midnight when no one's present. There is no distinction there. And when
there
you look
isn't
at
in their policy, but could the employer in the exercise of its judgment to take some disciplinary action less than termination or to terminate take those facts into account without violating the law?
This is a motion for summary judgment.
And when you look, that doesn't answer my question, though, counsel.
I'm sorry. Please repeat your question, sir.
You know what my question is. You just don't want to answer it.
No, I'll answer your question. I'm sorry. I forgot what you're asking.
Entitled to take those facts into account in deciding which level of discipline it wishes to impose.
Yes, absolutely. But that's not the issue that's before us. The issue that's before us on summary judgment is if there is any argument, and this case is replete, I pointed out the standard, if there is any argument by which a fact finder, i.e. the jury, can determine that there is a discriminatory bias, and if we're taking us into
the issue of fact here is whether you have created any issue of fact about whether this purported reason is pretextual. You can either do that through the strength of your evidence of retaliation, or you can do that through evidence that it's pretextual.
Okay. Yeah, I pointed out to this court the failure, the fact that she was pulled off of the floor by law enforcement, was not able to, were not permitted to complete her report on that particular day. The fact that other individuals had engaged in the exact same behavior and had not suffered the same consequence that she had after she had, in fact, just notified the company owner of the conduct that was occurring in a very contemporaneous time frame, the fact that she was not permitted or given the opportunity to modify the report, which is the one of the big subjects and arguments here. This is detailed in the memo for in the response to summary judgment, and it's detailed in my memorandum in response to this, you know, in support of this appellate court. So the point is there is significant evidence that has been submitted to show the pretextual nature of that argument. That's in the record, and it's in this memorandum. But it's also, and with all due respect to the court, it's not the argument that's before us. We're talking about retaliation here today. And the question is, did she engage in statutorily protected activity? The answer is yes. 4960 regarding the sexual discrimination, the WSHA complaint, I pointed out the Oregon statutes. No, she doesn't have standing to bring any action under Oregon, nor does she need to. It's the fact that she operates, that she acts in this fashion, and it, you know, points out this issue to the company owner and then is retaliated against. We have pointed these out. So the first element is met. Does she suffer an adverse employment action? Without question, she's fired. Is it because? That's the factual issue that we have here. And when you look at the contemporaneous nature of the complaint that is made to Mr. Bradley, and the fact that she is fired literally days later, clearly we are within that time frame. That is a contemporaneous act. So the elements of retaliation are met. The question, the reason Judge Fair dismissed this cause of action, did not have to do with the pretextual argument. It had to do with a complaint that, 2 seconds, CRAs. I apologize, I'm out of time.
It had to do with the pleading, you're saying.
The pleading, yes, civil rule 8.
Good morning. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Joseph Hogan. I represent the defendant appellee in this case, Sonatrol Pacific. Before the Court, there's kind of two different strands or avenues that can adjudicate this case. There's whether these new retaliation claims are even part of the complaint, or if they were essentially an effort to amend the complaint through an opposition to summary judgment, or then there's the individual merits to the case, which would include what Judge Leach was asking about. The order that I've prepared my arguments is to address first whether these claims are even properly before the Court, and so I will proceed with that strand first, unless the Court has more pressing questions. So this complaint was filed in March 2014. When the complaint was filed, the plaintiff knew all of the conduct that she personally had done. And we're talking about retaliation specifically in this case, which involves protected activity that she engaged in. And she knew what that conduct was. Now, in her complaint, she lists 5 causes of action. She also lists a variety of facts that support those causes of action. But in her causes of action sections, she expressly points to sexual orientation-related conduct, to her discrimination claim, her harassment claim, and to one of her negligence claims. With regard to her retaliation claim and another negligence claim, she points to alleged alcohol consumption. Now, we read the complaint, and we saw that in the retaliation section there was no mention of sexual orientation harassment or anything else other than alcohol consumption. But we are aware, and we were aware, that in the facts section she had mentioned this sexual orientation harassment. And so we wanted to be sure. So in November, we deposed Ms. Smith. And during that deposition, I want to just briefly quote from the clerk's papers, clerk's papers 275, and this is in our briefing as well. Question to Ms. Smith. As you sit here today, is there any other reason why you believe you were terminated other than in retaliation for telling HR and Bo Bradley, the company owner, about Mr. Bullis's and Ms. Evans' alleged drinking? Answer, I believe that is the reason I was terminated. She said that in November 2014. She did not correct her deposition. After the deposition, she did not amend her complaint to make clear that her testimony during her deposition was incorrect and that she actually was maintaining that she was terminated for other reasons. This is what she said in her complaint and her deposition, and we relied on that. And we're entitled to rely on that. It is correct for us to rely on that. Now, the case went forward. We moved for summary judgment. At that time was the first time that we saw that Ms. Smith appeared to actually believe that she had claims for other sources of retaliation. Now, retaliation is a category. It's not a specific claim. As a mental exercise, I sat down to think of how many types of retaliation could possibly exist in an employment case. I stopped at 36. They are different. They have different pieces of evidence that demonstrate them. They have different statutes of limitations. They have different burdens, whether it's motivating factor, but-for causation. They are different. And so we opposed these new causes of action. The court ruled in our favor, and we went forward with our trial, a 7-day trial, on the sexual orientation issues, discrimination and harassment and negligence. The negligence claim was dismissed on directed verdict, and the other two went to the jury, who, after about 2 hours of deliberating, returned the verdict in our favor. What we are seeing right now, and even at that point, there was no attempt ever made to amend the complaint. This is an attempt at a second bite at the apple, to try to rebring the sexual orientation issues and these other WSHA issues and organ law issues into the case that were not there in the first place. And for that to happen, this court has to ignore both CR 8 and CR 15. And those rules have
a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Let's assume instead of identifying all of the different claims under separate headings, this complaint simply had all of the factual allegations that are contained through paragraph 3.27. And then a prayer for relief. Would it sufficiently assert retaliation on the basis of something besides reporting alcohol?
I apologize. I am going back through to reskim to make sure I don't give an incorrect response to the court. It seems to me that before 3.17, the only issue that was essentially raised was the alcohol issue.
Well, she talks about never seeking sexual encounters, somebody saying wouldn't hire a woman who was more attractive than herself. Those would tend to have a sexual component rather than actual alcohol component.
Correct, yes.
So my question is, did the plaintiff say too much rather than not enough?
No, I think that it is correct for the plaintiff to list the facts that she is basing her claim on. If she had stopped at 3.7 and just said, please give me relief, we would have moved for a more definitive statement as to what the claims are.
Okay, but would you have been able, if instead of doing that, you had brought your summary judgment motion as you did, and counsel had responded as he has today about their issues of fact about these different kinds of retaliation, what would have happened?
Well, so I think that if we had not moved for more definitive statement, and if we had not tried to sort out in discovery what the claims were, and if we just accepted the pleading and moved forward without any, you know, based on an implied, several implied causes of action, then we would be conceding to those implied causes of action. We could go forward. And that's something that actually came up in the Dewey and the Kirby cases. There was this argument, well, it was implied because we talked about it a little bit. And the court said, well, no, they opposed it when you brought it up. It wasn't in your complaint, and we do have notice pleading, but that has to mean something. And this court said in the Malloy case, which we cite too, and that Dewey and Kirby repeat, that means you have to provide a notice of the legal grounds, not just the nature of the claim, but the legal grounds. We're entitled to know that. And again, we we did try to figure out to make sure what is the actual basis of this complaint. We went back and we did the discovery. We did her deposition. We asked her, and she was clear, this is it. It's just the alcohol consumption issue. That's all. She even later on page, clerk's page 331, made clear that sexual orientation-related conduct had nothing to do with it. And she represented that to the state of Washington as well in her unemployment paperwork.
Is that in the record?
That is in the record, Your Honor. Yes.
I'm just curious, how do you get the employment security stuff into your record? My understanding was that wasn't admissible in civil action.
It was in the deposition transcript, and I believe that that and all of the exhibits were included in the record. If I am mistaken about that, I apologize. I can go back and verify and supplement the authority, but the discussion is in the deposition. We talked about her unemployment paperwork, and she acknowledged it and said, yes, that's what I put in there. So if I am misstating the record, I believe it is in there, but if I'm wrong, I apologize.
I'm not accusing you of misstating the record. I'm just wondering if you had a way of getting that evidence in that never occurred to me.
I would not proceed to say that I know how to do something that would not occur to you, Your Honor. So that is our position here, that these claims were not included. The Malloy case, the Dewey case, the Kirby case are all clear that hindsight can be whatever it is. And the Trask case from the state Supreme Court talks about this. Hindsight may be 20/20, but asking someone to predict what a plaintiff may do is simply inappropriate and not what the rules require. Civil Rule 15, the amendment rule, has a purpose. Now, I want to move on quickly to respond to some of the comments opposing counsel made regarding the reason that Ms. Smith was terminated. There is one misstatement, misrepresentation that has been pervasive, we feel, throughout this case, and that is this suggestion that we terminated Ms. Smith because she missed a fire alarm. No, we did not terminate her because she missed the fire alarm. Sonatrol does not terminate anyone for missing one alarm. Now, that was the very significant straw that broke the camel's back. But Ms. Smith, and this is undisputed, had five write-ups in the 8 months before this fire alarm at Central Elementary School. It is undisputed that she agreed in writing with four of them and did not oppose the fifth one. It wasn't the fifth in time, but the remaining one. The last write-up that she received, she was warned, if you have another policy violation, you may be terminated. She then missed this fire alarm by over 11 times the permitted amount of response time. 11 times. And students were in class. And students are different. The law views children as a special classification generally. This wasn't a hardware store at midnight.
So does Sonatrol have a policy about last chance letters?
I do not believe they have a formal written policy, but they have taken that kind of approach before. They warn people before they terminate them. There's an individual who did miss a fire alarm. It was her first mistake. It is in the record. Her name is Ms. Post, and she was informed that if you have another issue like this, you will be terminated. She did have a second issue like this. She fessed up right away, but she was still terminated. And that is another key distinction between what Ms. Smith did and what should have happened. She did not tell anybody for a week. Now, the alarm came in at 3 o'clock. This police interaction that she's talking about happened about an hour later. So she had an hour to fill out her reports, and the reports were placed in the completed pile. They weren't left on her desk in some temporary fashion. Temporary reports are not a thing at Sonatrol. They're either complete or they're not. And it was put in the complete pile. And then for the next week, she said nothing to anyone about, you know what, I missed an alarm by 17 minutes. That was never said. And so with all of this, we have a legitimate reason for letting her go, and there's no pretext that opposing counsel has identified or suggested other than this incorrect statement that we terminated her just because of one fire alarm. And that is not true. Thank you.
You point out an interesting point. In the complaint, I said too much. I should have kept it more vague because there are additional issues that developed. And the nature of the complaint didn't change, which is why no motion under CR 15 was brought, because the theory of the case and the theory of the complaint under the retaliation cause of action did not change. Only the facts which were developed, and that's what the Bryant case is about.
What do we do with your client's deposition testimony?
You take a look at the case that was Taylor versus Bell, and you look at that, the very narrow rule that is cited out there when you have testimony that directly contradicts sworn statement, that, you know, you say X during the deposition, you get on the stand and you say Y. Well, what Taylor versus Bell talks about in this narrow rule is if you can explain the context and why there's a change, then that narrow rule that is Taylor versus Bell is not to be applied. That's what we have done in this case. We have pointed out, and the complaint talks about, in the facts section, it points out the sexual harassment. It points out the alcohol consumption, which is a safety issue under WSHA. So these are in the facts. And these depositions, which occurred months before this motion for summary judgment regarding Oregon statutes and criminal convictions and Mr. Lamont, et cetera, all of this was known. All of this was discussed. These aren't facts that were pulled up at the last moment. The only mistake that was made here is I didn't bring a motion under CR 15 to amend to add facts. I wouldn't have changed the cause of action. I didn't add a cause of action. But I could have sat there to add the facts. And I guess that's the mistake in hindsight I didn't make. But the facts were known. There was no prejudice whatsoever. The theory and the cause of action did not change. And that's the distinction between this situation and all the case law that's been cited in response. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That concludes our calendar for this morning. Court will be in recess.